Scott Wells for the Magic Word, and welcome. We're here day four, the final day of the 42nd the 4F Convention. And I'm here in the dealer's room with a couple of guys over in the UK side of the room with Will Howson. Hey, Will.
Hello.
And John Vanderput.
Good evening.
Better known as?
Fifth the Magic Dragon.
Fifth the Magic Dragon.
Yes.
And so he was doing his act last evening, then on the evening show, closed the show, and regaled us with great laughter. Very fun. Nice routine. And also, I thought your lecture was excellent as well, talking about the development of your character and everything. That, in a short soundbite, how would you say that you? What recommendations would you give to listeners who want to develop their own character rather than trying to copy someone else's?
Get a dragon suit.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say. Get a magic dragon outfit. You're done.
And you don't even wait to have to wear it just on Halloween. You can wear it year-round. Is that right?
Well, the only day you can't wear it is Halloween.
Because they expect it.
Right.
I never thought about that. So you go as yourself?
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. I just go as myself.
That's scary enough, then.
That's terrifying.
And Will, of course, some of you, he lectured on the first evening, actually the kickoff lecture, and was talking about Breslau and also about Hellas. And Victorian magic, and you're working on your doctorate on Victorian magic, which I think is pretty phenomenal. I didn't know they'd offered such a thing.
They kind of don't offer such a thing.
Okay.
I convinced them that it was a good idea, and they just agreed. So
you read the first one.
I read Professor Hoffman books for 4 years and get a doctorate at the end of it.
Wow,
it's quite good fun.
So yeah, you get a degree for something that you really love to do.
Absolutely.
You know, then as well.
It's something I do anyway, even if the uni wasn't offering it, and I get something at the end too.
What was your master's in?
Mechanical engineering. So clearly related and
sure,
a straightforward
start with
path to get into a literature and film department afterwards.
In the film department? Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's a literature, film, and theatre department where the PhD is.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And which college?
The University of Essex.
Okay.
So just up a bit from London.
Mm-hmm.
With a lady called Marina Warner, who's an expert on fairy tale and fantasy and myths and all that sort of real magic type stuff in literature. So she knows a huge amount about cultural context and all that sort of stuff.
Would this be something then that you could perhaps teach as well? Or have you thought about teaching magic at the college level for the others who are looking to get their doctorate? Because it seems like I remember Doug Henning getting a master's degree in magic out of Canada years ago.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I don't know too much about it. I guess the thing is that most of the people who teach have to be able to do basic general stuff, and because I've never done a bachelor's or master's degree in literature, I wouldn't be able to teach a first-year course on Shakespeare or something like that.
Point,
so
right.
I would be a fairly niche sort of a teacher, only able to do one thing.
Now, you do have access, of course, then, to the extensive library at the Magic Circle.
Yes.
And so how did you first get interested in Breslau?
Breslau came about through this handwritten notebook that I found in the Magic Circle's library. It describes 81 and a bit tricks, and it's anonymously written, and it's undated. So no one's got any idea who wrote it or when it was written. In this book, though, he mentions some of the people he saw performing, including guys like Breslau. And so by looking into people like Breslau, I was able to work out when this card material was written. And then having done that, I found out it was written around 1800, and that makes some of the stuff he's talking about really surprising, because people weren't supposed to know about things like Carmen D'Amico double handling 200 years ago.
Right. So it doesn't go back as far as Reginald Scott's book, obviously, but...
No.
Although
he does reference Scott's book, so he had read it.
How many books were there, you think, written between the time of Scott and this?
To be honest, I don't know.
I mean, there could have been very many.
Bill Kalush or somebody like that's really the guy who's an expert for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that makes the notebook interesting, though, is it's a handwritten book that was written either for the guy's own benefit for another magician's benefit rather than for the general public.
It's really more of a journal.
So reading this is like reading all the magic books we know about within the magic world today. Reading some of the more generally known books is a little bit more like reading the Paul Daniels book of magic or the Penn and Teller book of magic. It tells you what magicians were happy to tell the public about, but not what they were actually doing themselves.
and then that wasn't a natural progression necessarily to go into the Hellas book. You had completed the, tell that quick story then.
Yeah, okay, so I finished doing the notebook, and Peter Lane, who's the head librarian at the Magic Circle, gave me a lot of help with that. And a few weeks after I finished the notebook, Peter came in with a plastic bag, gave it to me and said, you might be interested in having a look at this. And it was another handwritten notebook, this time by a guy called Professor Robert Hellas, who gave Hoffman lessons before Hoffman wrote Modern Magic and all of his other books. And that kind of lost me another year of my life. Yes,
you can. So you can kind of get distracted fairly easily and go off in different weird directions.
It seems that way. Handwriting is enough to do it.
Yeah, trying to read the handwriting. And then it was just kind of a mystery wrapped in an enigma. It sounded like one thing kind of led down a different trail. So it hasn't been easy to find some of these references?
No, it's sort of... I guess the interest for me is a mixture of the detective work, trying to work out what's happening and why it's happening and when it was happening and what it fits into in a larger context, along with discovering good material that people were doing hundreds of years ago that perhaps has been forgotten in the meantime.
Right. I wanted to also ask you about, now that you are the editor of the Magic Circular, since Matthew Field had left, how did that come about?
Matt Field decided that he wanted to stop doing the magazine, and so it was advertised that there was going to be, you know, they were going to need a new editor. I applied, I did a presentation and stuff, and they wound up choosing me to do it.
So it was something that you had an interest, they didn't actually come seeking you, it was...
Submitted. They advertised to everyone that they needed someone to do it, and a couple of people applied, and... Yeah.
That's what I was just wondering. I mean, it's not like that you have all this extra free time. I mean, I think it's really being an editor is a labor of love.
Yeah, it seems a little bit like doing the circular is kind of a full-time job, yeah. And doing my PhD is supposed to be a full-time course, and none of that, two full-time things, shouldn't leave me time to come to 4F and do other stuff.
But here you are anyhow.
So far it's fitting together all right.
Are you going to be performing at FISM this year?
No, I'm not going to be performing. I'm going to be around.
Yeah,
but
right. Well,
I'm
just up the road.
Not going to be working. Absolutely. Yeah.
John, how about you? You're going to be going attending, I guess.
No, I don't think so. I might go and have dinner with someone, but who's there? But that's it. Yeah, I'll go and have dinner with Will, but I don't think I'm going to be there. I'm busy at that time. I'll be getting ready for my Edinburgh show.
The Fringe Festival kind of thing?
Lots of work to do.
Is the hardest thing, from what I've heard, truly trying to sell tickets? I mean, there's so much competition in the Fringe, no? People to show up or what?
People show up.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's a Magic Dragon. People show up.
When they see the suit, they know.
Right.
It's kind of
and like, if he's gone to that much effort, we'll buy a ticket. It's fine.
Have you attended other FISMs in the past?
No, never been to FISM.
You haven't at all, as far as like being a regular register. So again, like this year, you're just going to go and hang out, but not register to be a part of it.
Yeah, I probably won't.
Now let me, one other thing, and I'll let you go. About the weddings. I know that in the UK, it seems like that a lot of magicians work weddings. It's not really a popular venue for magicians in the States.
Right.
I'm assuming that you had worked weddings before PIF. Do you work weddings as PIF?
Yeah, I'm too expensive. No one can afford me at that wedding. I'm doing one in July or something. Or June, July, I don't know. But yeah, I have done a couple, and...
In full regalia, in full suit.
It's special, you know, it makes a special day even more special.
Yeah. One last question, this is it. And the name of my podcast is The Magic Word. And Will, I'm going to ask you this question then as well. What is your magic word? And it's not, it may or may not necessarily be something that you would use in context with your performance. It could be, you know, your life, your credo, something you live by. You know, what is a magic word? Something that means something to you.
Chihuahua.
Chihuahua. That's a good one. Will? Your magic word.
That doesn't mean I don't know.
Come on, Will. Give us a good one.
Dead people are interesting.
Just in one word would be...
History.
Yeah.
History.
History.
I like that.
History. Well,
that's very good.
I gave you some.
It's a
history is my magic word, courtesy of Piff.
There we go. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it a lot. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the Magic Word here, and I'm in the dealer's room, and there are a lot more dealers here this year than usual, and I'm here with Patrick Prosecki with Patrick's Magical Services. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
Doing great, and also just hanging out here at the booth is Gene Gordon.
Scott, how are you?
I'm nice great, you. Thank you. You live in Colorado, don't you?
Correct.
What part?
Denver.
Okay, Denver, very good. You go to the Rockies every year to that convention?
Yep, Magic in the Rockies.
Now, that's another one that I hear people talk about all the time. It's just a fantastic convention, of course, that this is unique, and people come to this and wouldn't miss it, like you and I and Patrick and others. But similarly to that, those are two that you kind of feel are the...
Those very unique. Magic in the Rockies has a great draw. It has a core crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Doc Eason, Eric Mead have access to a lot of... People just come because they like the atmosphere. They treat them right. It's nice. Patrick's been there as a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good. And I'm one of... I was just talking to the organizers. I'm one of... a smaller contingent that's been to all of them. I think we're at 18 or 19
years
now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But listen, we're talking about the four F's since we're here then right now. This is what number year for you then?
This is 12 for me.
And Patrick?
Nine. This is my ninth year.
And you come consecutively, never missed or had?
Never missed.
Every year.
Yeah. Yep, every year. And going to continue to go, come as long as that they've...
As long as it's still running, yeah. This is an awesome weekend.
What is it that makes... let me ask you, Patrick, what makes you come back every year?
I think it's the flavor of all the Europeans and Argentinians, guys from all over the world coming here, and you get to see them at least once a year and see some great close-up magic and new stuff.
Yeah, why travel overseas when they come here? You know, I guess that's right.
I agree. It's because you can see people here, like this weekend, debuting their FISMAX.
The FISMAX, that's a good point, because FISMAX coming up in Blackpool here,
and,
so yeah.
And then if it's a post-FISM, then you get those FISM winners show up here, so it's something you wouldn't get at your regional convention, not necessarily.
Right.
But it's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. Just a great chance to see talent.
Well, I'm sure that some of the guys come here to kind of, not practice, but at least to show or debut their FISMAX, knowing that people aren't going to be stealing any of their material, but number two is they might get some ideas. And so Obi has always said, you know, before we've been doing the afternoon shows and evenings, is these guys are going to be in FISM. If you have some good feedback, you know, please give them so that way they can kind of tweak it, you know, trying to win. So I think they respect everybody here.
I talked to a couple of them and told them I enjoyed their act and gave them a few pointers or said that there was a little flashier or something.
I told them I should scrap it and go with Sponge Bunnies.
I said, you know, come on now. There's much more original, you know, ball vase routines. Ooh, I shouldn't say that. Anyway, but yeah, it's great fun. And the sessioning, this is also one of the reasons to come here.
Sure.
Talking with guys, sessioning with, you know, all variety. You know, and the magic is universal,
right?
So you don't have to speak the language.
Yeah, like the guys from Japan. You know, I see them speaking Japanese and doing tricks over there. It's like you can explain just by demonstration. Put your hands here or there or something. So they're very sharing.
Yep.
Anything, Patrick?
No. Magic in the Rockies. I've been there the last couple of years. I've performed and dealt, and it's a great place to go. So if you can't make it to 4F, make sure you get out to Fort Collins.
That's a good suggestion, yeah, because this is invitation only, and that's kind of like
that's open
to all.
Yeah. And it's still small, so you get about the same size crowd as here. But it also has a stage show, a well-done stage show on Saturday night at the Lincoln Center there in Fort Collins. So it's a good mixture of people and good flavor and nice people.
I'll also point out that is the weekend following the Texas Association of Magicians Convention. Now, TAOM is always over Labor Day weekend, so you follow the weekend,
correct,
the first weekend of September.
Which is kind of good because some of the TAOM dealers and some of the people
come overseas.
They can make a swing of it and come from TAOM to Magic in the Rockies, so that's advantageous.
Right. Well, since this is called the Magic Word, I believe, Patrick, I may have talked with you before. Have I asked you your Magic Word before? I don't know if I have. What is your Magic Word? And not necessarily, maybe something you use, you know, in terms of when you're performing, making that magic moment happen. But more importantly, it might be a credo, something you live by. You know, what is a life lesson or perhaps just a magic word?
Well, whenever I send emails and letters, I always sign off, shuffle well, my friend. Shuffle well.
Shuffle off mortal coil. I, working for kids in restaurants, the magic word I use is oogie woogie. Yeah, I know it sounds funny, but you laughed. Because
they
laughed.
Right there, yeah.
They laughed.
Boogie woogie.
And then I
it
say,
sounds like booger almost. And little kids like that.
And then I say, it's not boogie woogie. Stop dancing. And then, you know, I get, I have fun with them. But then, and then they, I make them recite it. And then I usually say oogie woogie, and I just made that up. And, yeah. Which is funny for them. So that's a magic word I've used for a long time, and it works for me.
Great. Very good. Thank you, Gene Gordon. Thank you, Patrick Prezecki.
Scott.
And glad you guys are here. And for now, Scotty out.
And I'm in the mood.
All right. Scotty here for the Magic Words. And we just finished dinner on this fourth and final day. And before we go into the evening shows over here, I got Mark Mason and Charlie Randall, formerly of H&R Magic and Books. And but he's still publishing books, still hanging out. So I just thought I'd talk with a couple of dealers here as well. How you guys doing?
Yeah, great, Scott. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well,
good,
thank
good,
you.
Good, good,
excellent.
Good.
Doing fine. Good. Well, now, how are you enjoying the convention? You're on the bill tonight.
I'm on the bill. I have to find a card.
Is this...
But I can find a card anywhere in the world. I figured that out. So I'm going to find a card here and see how it goes.
Because
right?
We have so many people from other countries, you can find a card in the world. You
that's
know?
Right. Well, I'm from Alabama, as you know. You can tell
by your accent.
So that's kind of another country. The accent gives the heart diggity down. That gives it away a little. But, yeah, it's been good, and I am on the bill tonight. The dealer's a bit different this year, Scott. They've got it in two rooms.
Yes.
So they're kind of split, but I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, if I'm being honest, but it seems to be about where I'm normally at here. And,
right.
And it's just fun to see the guys and watch some tricks and... Yeah. I hope some do them wrong so you look better, right? Come on, let's not lie. We're praying, right?
Now, is this your first? Are you going to be working for your bachelor's? Or is this
no, I'm number five.
Your fifth one, okay.
Number five,
okay.
Yeah. What about you, Charlie? How many times have you been?
I've been here 20 times.
Holy.
Only performed once, and they've never asked me again.
So you've only got your bachelor's.
Does that okay. Tell you something, Charlie?
That's why he sells okay. Books.
That's why I sell books.
He yeah, reads exactly. Them, but he doesn't practice them.
Yeah, we just sell books, baby.
But I mean, as far as your performances, have you? How many times have you performed here?
This will be number five. Every time,
oh, okay.
Every time
every
I've
year?
Been invited,
wow.
They've asked me to perform. So the first time I came, I performed on the Thursday, I think,
yeah.
Because obviously he thinks I'm not going to do a very good job, right?
Like, testing you yeah. Out, okay.
And
how's this Brit going to do?
And the first time I came
Florida.
Was the best I ever did. So that's kind of weird, right? And then yeah. The next four have all been, I managed to scrounge my way onto Saturday. You do have to give Obi some money for that, but
I wonder how you move up that way. I performed here 8 times and that over the 29 years, but I haven't gotten to the Saturday
all
spot.
Right, yeah. Well, that tells you something as well, Scott,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Maybe you should sell books.
Maybe I should, yeah.
Or stop
right.
Doing mentalism.
That's right. You know, that's one thing I have noticed. Well, actually, two things. One is this year, there hasn't really been any mentalism. You know, some years that, okay, you might be doing something tonight.
I so. Might be. I might be. I might do ESP. Egg, sausage, and peas. I love that trick. It's my favorite.
And music. You know, the Shoma had done that excellent lecture the other night that was just on mixing music, and so perhaps
like that
just kind of made us.
You know what? I
kind of
like
it.
That
yes.
Stuff a bit more than the tricks. I know that's not nice to say on a on thing, but
yeah.
I like that stuff. I like the stagecraft yeah. And the microphone techniques and how they mix music and stuff. I enjoy that as much as a guy finding
it. So you don't like the lectures where they give away the tricks. You want to be able to sell the tricks.
Ah, yeah, right. Well, there's always that. We need to sell something. I'm poor, don't forget. I'm the poor guy. We're not all bloody
yeah.
H&R Bucks. Or neither are you any longer, right?
Well, Mark, you're always making up some new stuff. Neil, what's the newest thing at your shop?
Here I've got a new Double Deception. It's called Double Deception Deluxe with a brand
that.
New locking
swap. Yep.
Me and Bob worked hard on it all year, and that's going to be really good.
So now, Bob lives near you in Florida, right?
He lives in Sanford, about 30 minutes from me, and he's normally here. He just wasn't feeling too good, so he decided
so
to stay at home.
Sanford and Son, I guess. It's kind of like
Sanford and Son, yeah. That's what we call Steptoe and Son in England. That's the two guys,
Steptoe,
right?
Okay, yeah. Sure, yeah, yeah.
They collect garbage, is that them?
Yes.
That was Steptoe and Son in England. Great show, I liked that. So I like Sanford and Son. We're a double act, we're null and void.
So you have a new coin.
I have a new coin, okay. We're working on some new stuff for FISM. We got a really cool trick with... it's a secret, I can't tell you, but it's a, it's a really cool trick. So we're messing around with some things, which is going to be in Blackpool this year,
yeah.
Sunny England.
I was going to say, your hometown.
Yeah, 10 miles from where I lived. And
so you're going?
Yeah, I'm going to be going. I can't believe I'm actually booked to do something.
And you're not going to be going to the IBM convention, I understand, because
well,
of that.
It's back to back. I can't do it because it finishes on the Saturday.
It starts on
and dealers must be set up by Sunday. You cannot set your booth on Monday.
Very picky about
so you can't get there. I am going to do SAM, though. I'll be in Las Vegas. Yeah, I always like going to Vegas. Mm-hmm. Donate a few bucks, right?
Exactly. What do you make you spend? You leave it.
Well, usually
it's Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, exactly.
It's your money.
That's about how it is.
You know, one of the things that recently also I really enjoyed hearing the interview with you on Real Magic, on Cosmo's...
Cosmo prized a bit of a real story, right?
Yeah, it was really some fascinating stuff that I didn't know. I mean, I've known you for so long and I've been friends, but I didn't...
he made all that
no
up.
Okay.
I thought I might sell a bit of extra stuff if they thought I lived on the streets.
That's right.
Tell
this poor guy, that's right.
They're going to just give me more,
he was
right?
a con man.
Yeah,
and so
yeah,
it's
That was a great story, though. All kidding aside. Yeah,
thank you very much, yeah. We strive to... do the best we can, right?
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Yeah. But you really kind of risen above, I guess, you know, that as far as...
It's really kind of a cool story. Yeah, it's a good story, and it's...
It's not really published anyplace else. I haven't
seen it
written.
It's not published anywhere else. Actually, yeah. I must say, just recently, Linkin Ring asked if I'd do the one-man parade and do the front cover and do the whole story, because there's a bit more than that as well, which I didn't know.
Can you tell us over here?
Well, I decided not to tell it there, because Cos knew, because I said, let's just see how that goes, because it already isn't the world's greatest story. You know, beating people up for money is not funny, really, is it? And I thought people might be really upset, but when they realise if you don't do something... You know, you're gonna be hungry. I mean, really, I was living on the streets. I was homeless.
Live or die.
So I did a few things that I shouldn't have done. So eventually, in the Linkin Ring, we might add to the story. I've got to make something up first, because I need more money because I'm poor, right?
Can you tell us one story?
Oh my God, there's so many stories, and you know, I worked on the Carney for a long time as well. I was with Andy Dallas yesterday. You know,
yes,
Andy Dallas loves all
St.
the Carney games.
And, Illinois.
Yeah. Well, he's Champagne. Right?
Champagne. Right.
I'll tell you where he is, because I'm English and I know where he is.
What do I know?
Yeah.
And I'm from Illinois.
Yeah,
actually.
You do mentalism, right?
My wife is from right outside
That's
Champagne.
That's why they
Mattoon.
Don't have you on the show.
That's why on Saturday.
That's
show.
Why you didn't do Saturday. But I did the Carney for a long time as well. And
you're still doing the Carney. We've seen you at the booth.
That's the Carney, right?
That is
the Carney. Yeah. And we had eight Carney games that were what they call trap games. Do you know anything about the Carney?
You had them at Magical.
Yeah, trap games is where
where
they trap you. You get so you think you're going to
get
some,
win.
Yeah,
ooh,
so
yeah.
So they let you win twice, and then they hold you with the trap.
Because you can go up to the next level.
Yeah, and then you never ever win. And I have some great stories about trap games, and me and Andy had a good laugh yesterday. So eventually, I will tell a few stories on that as well, and we'll see how it goes. But I think I'm going to do that for the Linkin Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy Patrick Smith really wants me to do it.
You should.
I think it would be good.
Every time
story.
He sees me, he says, do it.
Inspirational.
Yeah, and I had some really nice emails from kids and different people saying it was inspirational. So that's what it is, really, right? It's almost a motivational speech,
right.
Isn't it? You know, I keep thinking, you know. That.
You could go on the circuit.
Yeah. Have you thought about that, about doing something instead of magic, actually, of...
I just
speaking
did,
circuit pays more.
I just did
ask Giovanni.
Yeah, exactly
I just
right.
did a pitch for Home Shopping Network for barbecue sauce. And,
are you absolutely serious?
Yeah, absolutely serious. Yeah, I've been there a couple of times. I did the whole spiel and did the pitch and they filmed it, and we'll see how that goes, you know. So I might be.
What's the sauce? What is it?
It's a type of barbecue sauce.
What's the brand?
I'm not allowed to tell you. No, really,
because
I signed a waiver.
But it hasn't aired yet.
You're English. What do you know about barbecue sauce?
Yeah,
exactly.
What do I know about pitching stuff on Home Shopping Network, right? But they seem to like the Brits. So you never know. Something could happen there, and we'll see what happens. I just did a whole thing for them, and really tried to angle the whole pitch so that they might like fit me for something else, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, was this something you'd been working for the company, like in a trade show before? And they said,
no,
okay,
this was a guy who saw me working, and... came and saw me work three times, and then
he
said,
"You knew a good thing when he saw."
And
it.
Said, "You know, I've got a thing, and I'm trying to get a thing, and what I need you to do is this." And then what they do, actually, believe it or not, you don't really. It's like a mock thing because it's all live.
Yeah,
they set up the whole camera
like an infomercial.
Yeah,
or okay,
but not real.
Yeah,
and but then
with an studio audience,
and then they
quote,
try and catch you where some woman calls and she asks a live question, and they see how you're going to react and how you'd be on a live. And if they like you, then you're in with the shots. All I can say truthfully is when I left, they said they loved it. So we'll see, right?
Yeah,
we'll see.
Man.
So maybe I may be gone and selling crap on here, quality products. Sorry, on Home Shopping Network channel.
Yeah.
It's just a different dealer's room, right?
Yeah,
and if not, with every double deception, you'll get a dark sauce.
But wait, there's more. If you're 26 caller, we can give you a double deception leather coin purse. All right, but I got to go and open. But it's always great to speak to you, Scott. You are the main man. And Charlie, stay lucky, buddy.
Right,
and look after
yourself. Let me ask you one last question. The name of the podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word?
My magic word.
It could be something you live by, not necessarily something that you use, you know, in the context of when you're performing.
That's
but
a good
could
question.
Be Trish. Something that's...
I say Trish in case she's listening.
And your second magic word.
Barbara.
Monica. Okay. Well, Charlie, what about yours? Well, he's thinking of one.
Magic word. It'd have to be my family. I don't know.
Yeah, family is yours? Is good. Family? Okay. Yeah, what is yours then? Don't copy.
I don't really have a magic word, but everyone says they have dreams, and I've always said I have no dreams at all, just plans. Dreams are for something that doesn't really happen. Plans always I make happen. So I have no dreams, just plans.
Somebody said plans or goals, maybe it's goals, are dreams with a deadline.
Yeah, so. And it's a similar sort of thing, and I've always said to myself, set myself a goal, a plan, and try and get there. I'm not going to lie, it doesn't always work out, but you do the best you can, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you're doing very well, both of you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Take it easy, Scott.
We'll see you. This is Scotty out. All right, well, the show is over and everything except just the late night sessioning and everybody staying up until it's time for their flights tomorrow. And I'm here now with the person who has officially won the most valuable performer over here. This is Dennis Baer. Hey, Dennis, how are you?
Hello, fine, thanks.
And you're from Germany.
And that's right.
That's right. And did you just come over for this or...?
Mostly. I stayed in New York for 1 week for holidays, more or less, lecture, and now I'm here, and then I'm back.
And so you're heading back to Germany right after this, then, too?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Well, I wanted to, first of all, congratulate you on the award that you won. This is your first year here, actually, too.
It is,
And you gave a lecture then this evening, which was, or this morning, I guess, which was fantastic.
Thank you.
And got a lot out. Did you sell out on all your books, by the way?
Yes. I didn't bring too many because of the flight, you know, the weight. But
sure.
I sold all of them, so that's good.
And probably took some orders, I guess, for some others, too.
Yes, that's true.
And it was quite interesting, too, for those of you guys who don't know about this. Of course, it's on, not just barrel shuffling, but explain exactly what we did say, what the books are about.
They are about card tricks, mostly, and
yes.
The methods vary a lot. So some do use barrel shuffles, but not all of them.
Yeah, right, right.
It's just, if you like card magic, I think you will find something.
Very good card magic. It was excellent stuff. I think a lot of guys would like this. But I also want to talk with you about the project that you are doing, which is the archives. And you spent about a half hour talking about that, and I was just amazed and astounded. So tell us more about this.
Yeah, I've been doing this for more than 10 years now, but it's growing. The idea is that I have on my website a database with books, and there are the table of contents of all the books, and it's searchable. You can search for artists, for authors, for tricks, you know, if you want to find versions of Twisting the Aces, you enter Twisting the Aces in the search field, and you find those. And it's good for research or finding something where you don't know where it might have been in some book. So
it's kind of like the Conjuring Arts Center from the standpoint that you can use it for research, but they are not copies of the books, but they would be just the tricks that are in the books by chapter. And
Just references. So you need to have the book to actually look it up.
Right. So if you had the book already, exactly, that you can say, okay, well, I forgot this was in some place, but I can't remember which book it was.
Yeah.
You got it in your library. So I'm looking
if you think, there was something in Table Course, and I don't remember in which volume, you can use the database and find it.
Right.
Quickly.
Whether it's going to be ropes or whatever, and you've got, how many books are it? 319 books or something?
Yeah, a bit over 300. Some are very thin, some are a bit thicker, like Greater Magic, for example.
Right.
So it's a mix.
And how many categories?
Oh, I don't know. A couple of hundred.
Yeah, several hundred, I should say. Categories that and subcategories of subcategories of different things you can kind of delve into. So again, that you can cross-reference this by the trick title, by the category, by the author's name, by so many different things.
I mean, it's free on my website. You can just go there and click through it and have a look.
It's right. Have a look at it, and it is again. I guess I haven't told you, it's www.archive.dennisbear.de.
Something like this. You don't need the www, actually,
okay.
I guess that's right.
Yeah.
On my website, there's a link to it. So.
Okay, and your website is?
DennisBear.de.
Yeah. DE, right, for DE for Germany. Also, that is spelled Dennis, which is with one N, for those in America, is D-E-N-I-S, and Bear is B-E-H-R.
That's it.
Right, so DennisBear.de would get to your website, then you can get to that link there from there.
That's right.
Or if it's archive.dennisbear.de, you need to go and rush there and then bookmark this, because I tell you, that's awesome. And you said you've got how many books in your library?
Oh, there are about maybe 1,800.
1,800, so you've got several more years in front of you to continue to research.
Several lifetimes, I guess.
To put more of this in there. After you guys delve into this and see a little bit of this and think he's only got, 300 and some books, you know, that are in there and think that's taken 10 years. Well, when you start to see all that, this and this is just you doing this, too. That's what is amazing, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing it myself.
Have you thought about making it kind of like Wikipedia, where other people can contribute and they can kind of be authors and saying, I've got this book
know.
And this sort of thing?
I'd have to control it, I guess, because if something is in the wrong category and nobody finds it, or if some trick that is in the context of another trick isn't in the database with its own entry and stuff like this, so I know where to put things. So
yes. Yeah.
I can do it best.
Let me just congratulate you. I think it's well-deserved on the award that you had won, the most valuable performer here. And then also congratulations on the archive, and good luck in continuing on with that. And you're an excellent magician, a cardician. You really are. Really, really good. So I thank you very much for being part of the magic. Well, let me ask you, Dennis, one last question.
Yeah.
The name of this podcast is called The Magic Word, and you've got a lot of words, obviously, that you've been researching and reading. What is your magic word that you would use? Now, maybe a magic word, you know, maybe that you use when you perform. It could be something that you have as part of your life, that's a lifestyle, your credo. What do you live by? What is your...
Well, beer.
Beer.
Yeah.
I like that. I guess that's B-I-E-R in German. Beer.
Double E in English.
I'm gross. Very good. Thank you very much, Dennis. I appreciate you being on the podcast over here. That's Dennis Bear. This is Scott Wells. Scott, Well, the party is not over. It's just beginning because it's just now midnight. So we're in the precursor suite. And going to be talking a little about with a bunch of different guys. So as I go around the room, I'm going to just ask you guys to say your names so they recognize your voice, and also because I want to find out what you guys have thought about the convention highlights or whatever. Andrew, how about you? Tell me.
Hi, Scott. Andrew Quinn. Two highlights to me was Dennis Bear's lecture.
Yeah.
Excellent sharing and deep thought.
Yeah. Won the most important performer.
MVP.
MVP.
Of the tournament. Or of the convention.
Convention.
As well as Will Houston's lecture. Will's a deeply thoughtful guy, and I thought he presented very well.
Is it stuff that you think that you'll use, or just stuff that was good food for thought?
Very interesting to me.
Yeah.
As opposed to moves.
So you got his book?
Of course.
Yeah. Well, you're one of the lucky ones. I guess he sold out. Ron, what about you, man? What'd you like?
I'm Ron Wall.
Not too soon.
I was.
Not too soon.
Oh, hello. Was not particularly fascinated by Will Houston's lecture because I've heard him three or four times.
Yeah.
And I have all the books.
Yeah.
But Dennis Bear's lecture and his performance were both very good.
Yeah. Okay. Golly, I feel like it's a morgue in here all of a sudden.
Wow.
Come on, what happened? It was so chatting. That's right. Okay.
So we don't say the same stuff.
That's right. Go on, Rod.
Well, Scott, I'm Rod Chow, and I really enjoyed the convention, especially, of course, the Saturday night show was always wild and amazing, and the finishing closing act was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Farquhar did an excellent job as well. And his
not just because he's sitting next to you.
He is a fellow Vancouverite
from
Canada, so I always speak highly of him. It was just a great time. I actually was one of the volunteers running the new 4F shop, and that was a shop of memorabilia, so I got the opportunity to meet a lot of magicians coming in there buying their FFFF souvenirs, and that was a great highlight of mine as well.
Along that line, they had a bunch of stuff they were getting rid of, and they're also going to be talking about what the shop... Now, Mandy, don't leave. I want you to give me your highlights also. Just that about an idea for the name of the shop.
Yes, actually, Opie was clearing out some of the rabbits that he'd been collecting over the years. It's actually accumulated a huge stock of that, and it's really taking up too much room in his house, so he was giving those away to everyone that wanted them. And the 4F shop is a pretty good name, but they're trying to think of an even cooler name that just reflects 4F and what we do there.
So if you got a good idea, then phone it in or send an email.
Sure,
it's actually a contest.
That's right. Yeah. You get some free paper rabbits. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, Sean.
Me? Aardvark Mediocre here. My two highlights. I'm constantly amazed every time I listen to David Stone talk. He's the honoree. When he did his lecture and he got to the tool, and how many did he do in a row? He had to do at least a dozen effects.
And he said he had like 52 of them.
He said there was 52 of these given away for free on YouTube now because he can't find a way to disseminate them to all people.
Yeah.
I mean,
you haven't had a tool to do the tool.
Yeah, and none of the tricks looked similar to each other. They all had different effects and feelings. I thought that was awesome. And it's got to be Mandy Farrell. She did a spot that...
that was funny. That was great.
Made me lose my cookies twice. It was awesome. And to see my brother, Ice McDonald, humbled in front of everybody was...
That was funny.
Unbelievable. Two solid
yeah,
moments.
Always wanted one of those.
Oh, yeah, always wanted one of those.
That
and
was
the head
a good
of the bigger
line.
Marker was so good. It was just killer stuff.
That was funny. That was good. Thoughts on Mike come in. Come on, Mike. Tell me what you think. What did you think of the convention? What were your highlights? Yeah, I just have a little pound on the scotch there.
Hi, Mike Haram. Thank you for asking. The highlights are every time for the 4F convention is the camaraderie, the old friends, and this year I have a whole bunch of new friends from France and Italy. I loved Will Houston's history, theory, lecture. It's something that a lot of times at this convention we're more concerned with moves and techniques. With moves and techniques, so this gives us a little bit of balance. That's great. But the friendship and you coming up here to the precursors, this is what I get out of this. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Come on, Jared.
I'm amazed at the young talent. It just bowls me over.
That's a good point. I like to see people coming in. You know, that a lot of guys are leaving, you know, it seems like. You're checking out, you know. But we got a lot of young guys coming in who are really good. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, when I was 15 years old, I could barely stand,
yeah.
Let alone palm a card.
And that 15-year-old kid was awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
He was.
Yeah. I hate him. He's got hair, too.
Well, yeah. He's got youth, and he's got talent and hair. I hate him.
All those three things I hate.
Well, he was a bubble boy for 3 years, so he had a lot of time, I guess.
I guess
you know,
so,
to
grow
to
hair.
To be in there. To work on that. Over there. That was true. Mandy, okay. What do you think from the distaff side?
It was.
Oh, we have to say your name first. And
Hi. It's Mandy or Amanda, and it's always the people, and I think that comes above the magic. Really, mm-hmm. It's just it's like family.
Yeah.
And I just love coming. Primarily the people, followed by the magic. But I think this year I've gone a card trick too far, and I've come out in a nasty rash. No, I'm serious. Look.
Oh, you're breaking out. Oh,
I'm breaking out.
You really are on your legs right there in cloves, clovers and spades.
It's a nasty rash from seeing too many card tricks.
The hose she's wearing has clubs and spades on them. Okay. That is really good. How high up does that rash go, though? That's my question.
Well, I can't tell you where the hearts and diamonds are.
Do you know what they call that line at the top of the nylon where it's right up by the thigh? You know what they call that? It's the giggle line. Because if you get past that, you're laughing.
I think the lucky line.
How would you know?
Exactly.
Buried, not buried.
You know, I thought it was interesting this week also that the one theme the team seemed to generate was about music, you know. And I don't know whether I was hyper aware of it after Shoma had given his lecture, you know, about mixing your music and what kind of music to use. And I've been using music for a long time, even for close-up, you know, when you can. But I noticed that almost everybody had something, whether it was sound effects or, you know, was themed to some music in the background. And I understand some of the Japanese or some guys who can't speak English very well, but if they're we're just talking about Shoma right now. We're talking about
a mix of emotions.
Come on over here. That's right.
Podcast.
That's right.
Yeah.
Came on over that we were talking about. To me, I thought that your lecture was one of the highlights. You know, then also of confirming what a lot of people should know or should do at least. But also, a lot of guys were and girls were using music. And I don't know, again, whether I was more hypersensitive to listening for it since that you had talked about it, but I thought it was kind of a very interesting
yeah, I think,
lecture.
Well, so thank you.
Well, what was your highlight? I mean, aside from your staff, what did you like?
I love how Obi whistles the whistle every time before the show.
That didn't get annoying to you? Of course, now what number is this for you? How many of these have you been?
First one, yeah.
Well, okay, so you're not used to it after a while.
And then, and then after the show, he says, you know, most of you are excused, and then you can tell he's a hockey coach.
Oh, that's right. Yes, exactly right. Very authoritarian.
Yeah, so I love that. But, you know, the whole place is great because it's like a big family get-together.
Mm-hmm.
To be quite frank, I'm quite full with close-up magic. I don't. It's enough for me. I'm a stage guy.
You're not a finger flicking card guy.
Well, cards, I mean, coins, I do card tricks and coin tricks, and especially with coins on stage, I know a lot. But I've seen one too many card tricks this weekend.
Well, then you're the wrong convention because there's gonna be more. This is where you're gonna be able to see them all.
But it's much fun, and it's incredible how much talent is here. And you know, everybody knows great magic, and the great people. And I got to speak with people, you know, and everybody's doing something. You know, somebody's writing books, other people shooting movies, other people coming up with new tricks.
There are a lot of guys who didn't even perform that are really top talent guys
who blow everybody away.
Yeah, that's what the late night sessions are about. Things like, you know, you see everybody, you know, talk about different ideas or presentations, or you know. Maybe music, you know, saying, have you tried this or that, you know, or this program? And, of course, you know, with technology, everybody's talking about new apps, you know, which you can get. Somebody, well, like you were talking about some apps. Well, you actually didn't talk about too many apps for mixing music because you said that there are so many out there.
There's
but
many out there.
Since you didn't have really time to talk about it in your lecture, are there anything that you can recommend?
Well, there are some people ask me if they hear something on the radio or here or there, how they could find out what kind of music is it.
Yeah.
And there are some apps for that. I don't know.
You mean like Shazam and things where you listen?
Yeah, like those. But I found that they don't work perfectly. You're like, they would work some of the time, other times not. What I do, and this is easier than downloading any app, is memorize a line from the lyrics, put it into Google, and it will be within the first three hints.
That's a good suggestion.
Yep.
That's better than calling the radio station. Of course, if you listen to Sirius or XM or something, you can't do that.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
And it's been very useful for me. And regardless if you need it for magic or just listening, if I hear a nice piece of music on the radio, then I know I want to hear more stuff from this artist.
Yep.
And even if it's a cliche line, like, you know, I want to love you forever, ooh, your brown hair, then if there's one word, try to find that one word that would be different from the very, like, not love.
Yeah, all right.
Most likely. And then put it in Google and you will find the solution.
What about sound effects?
Sound effects?
You know, there's like royalty-free programs you're talking about, like Freesound, I think, and some other places.
Yeah, there are some great websites for sound effects as well. There's one website that's mainly for video animation called videocopilot.net. And there's this really awesome guy who makes these amazing animations in After Effects. But they also released a DVD called Designer Sound Effects. All sound effects for trailers. Swishes, swooshes, impacts, hits, everything. And it's like this gold mine of sound effects.
And what's it called again?
VideoCopilot.net.
VideoCopilot.net, okay.
But BBC has a very big collection of sound effects, and there are great sound effect collections. If you Google it once again, you'll be able to find and buy them. And even buying, I think buying sound effects and music online, that's a great way to go, because lately, you know, audio recording has been, in the past decade or two, has been gotten so much better than before.
Sure.
And these royalty-free sites could release really good quality stuff. And they're not amateur anymore.
Right.
They used to be, but they're not anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can look around and search.
The program that I've used for a long time for mixing music is Audacity.
Yep.
And Audacity.
I know Audacity.
Yeah.
Well, it's a free program.
Right.
It's very basic. And it's easy to handle.
Right. It's very user-friendly.
It's a very good place to start. And then if you get better, you can use other programs. I myself use Sony's Vegas, which is a a video editing program. Mm-hmm. I edit tons of video, but since I can do all my, you know, audio editing in the same program, I just don't bother with other programs. I used tons of other programs before, but yeah. I don't need to.
But now you got all everything you need within that program. That's great. Well, I'm glad you like your first year, so you're going to plan on coming back future years too.
Yep. I'm, as long as I have some free time,
yeah,
which I hope I will, although I'm...
You live in Hungary, right?
I live in Hungary.
Okay.
And I cannot wait to go back. Actually, today's my birthday.
Oh, well, congratulations and happy birthday.
For about 25 minutes, I'm already 27 years old. It's kind of scary, although it's not that much. I don't know. But anyways, so I can't wait to go home. And I've been on the road for about a month and a half, 2 months, and I spent almost no time at home. So now it's my time to go home, relax.
Do you have a wife and family at home there?
No, I don't have like a wife or kids or anything like this. But I do have a family.
Yeah, sure.
Other than them.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I have tons of friends.
And what type of work do you do then over there?
At home?
Yeah, mainly just magic full-time.
I do full-time magic.
Yeah.
I travel my ass off. Yes. And
around Hungary or throughout?
Around the world.
Okay.
I did, I think, over 60 trips in this 2.5 years since FISM.
Wow. Okay.
And I think it was maybe one or two of that 60 that wasn't magic-related.
Uh-huh.
So it's been a lot. It's been a real ride.
Are they mostly corporate type of shows that you're doing?
Nope. Mostly magic, like conventions, lectures.
Yeah. For the magician shows. For magic conventions, not for companies then?
No, not for...
Okay.
I did some company stuff. In Hungary, I do quite a lot of corporate work.
Mm-hmm.
But abroad, usually magic conventions, lectures.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it. And it's much better than corporate work, because when you do corporate work, then you sit in your hotel alone, and you do your show, you get paid, then you sit in your hotel alone a little bit more, and then you go home.
Yeah.
And magic conventions, you get to meet all the fun people. Plus, since I travel a lot so much, and I know so many other magicians,
right?
For instance, Sean, who's
right.
Sort of my brother in magic.
Yeah.
It's always so good to see him, and you know, we get into talking
yeah.
again, and this is just so much better.
It's all part of the brotherhood. Speaking of which, that let me ask you what your magic word is. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So what, not necessarily something that you would use like in the context of a performance, it may be your magic word, but it's something you might live by, you know, a word. Or
anything is possible.
Anything's possible.
That's my magic word. That's what I always say.
I like that very much. So with that, I'm going to let you go. So that's kind of just... a little bit of a wrap of some ideas of what people thought were some of the highlights of the convention, and everybody seemed to like it. Wish you were here. And for now, this is Scotty out. Well, we're still in the precursor suites over here then right now, and I'm with Ed Eckel, who is one of the originators, of course, with the precursor suite way back when. Hello, Ed.
Hi.
And thank you very much again for hosting this little soiree.
Okay. Let's just get this straight. Precursor suite ended.
Some time ago?
Yeah.
But it's still a precursor to me.
Yeah, it is to most people.
Yeah.
When
talk about what the precursor was for those people who listen.
What the precursor was a place for ordinary people to get together. It was a hospitality room, and we had a great time.
Yeah.
And I got to say this, because precursor ended, the magazine,
yeah.
And we decided to stop the precursor suite, and the guys from Syracuse and Utica took it over, and they call it The Room. And they were well taught by Ron Zollweg.
Not to call it precursor?
Who was great in organizing the precursor suite.
Yes, yeah.
Precursor magazine was edited by Bill Measle.
Mm-hmm.
I published it. And Bill Measle and Ron Zollweg and I, we were friends for years, started the precursor suite. Well, actually, it was at the early 4Fs. Bill started a little hospitality room.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And Ron and I were in with that. And then later on, when the Precursor magazine came about, that's when we named it Precursor Suite.
Right.
But early on, we were at the Hojo's. in Cheektowaga.
Yeah.
And, well, they treated us very well in Mojo. We were up all night and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the big thing of it was that Bill had mentioned that there were always parties, and the ordinary person didn't know about it. So he said, we're going to have
our own party. That's
our own party for us guys. And then the one little problem came up when the precursor was named Precursor Suite, because a lot of people thought they had to be subscribers.
Yeah.
Well, we put a kibosh to that.
Yeah, so
it has nothing to do with subscribing to Precursor.
Right.
And we had a real ball, and these guys now are having...
Yes.
They're finding out what something like this is.
Well, as I recall, it always was and still is not just a time of brotherhood and camaraderie, but of sharing. Because, let me back up a little bit, because the Precursor, for those younger people who may not, you're thinking of magazines today being a slick publication.
That's not
what this was. It was really kind of a mimeograph newsletter kind of a thing, or it was typewritten.
We were beyond the mimeograph.
Okay.
We were talking about that the other day, because Bill patterned the precursor on Howard Lyon's Ibidem.
Oh, sure.
Now, the Ibidem was mimeographed.
Mm-hmm.
And it, so... When we started out, we knew we couldn't afford to have the thing printed.
Yeah.
So every subscriber got an original Xerox.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we put it. You know, they did it on a big machine.
Yeah. And how many subscribers did you have back?
At the time, our print run was 200.
Yeah.
And at the time, by the time the first issue and so on, and people knew about it, I think Bill was selling about 150.
And ran for how many years?
23 years. We had 100 issues.
Okay. So it wasn't monthly?
No.
Yeah.
When we started, it was three times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bill retired, and it became four times a year.
Yeah.
And then when I retired, we ended up at five times a year.
Okay.
And then we had specials and so on.
I remember those as well.
Yeah.
But another reason that you, as I recall, had the hospitality suite initially was try to solicit some ideas, because people would come in and they would just start sessioning. And I remember Larry Jennings and guys, you know, sitting on the floor cross-legged and doing something. So that's a good idea. We'll write that down, and that shows up in a precursor later, you know.
Well, that was one of the things that Bill and Nick Trost got together.
Yeah.
And they came up with something, and no place to publish it.
Uh-huh.
So Bill Eddy, I'm going to do it myself.
I can do it, yeah.
And then he found a sucker to do it, which is me. We had great times.
Oh, indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
So Precursor is gone by the wayside, and so that now it's just called The Room.
The Room.
These guys, and again, it's the same, you know, type of thing. As I say, camaraderie and people. Because I see you got a close-up table set up over here. I know that every year that somebody will come over and do something, pull out some cards, and this goes, again, until dawn, it seems like.
Well, that's the thing. It's cyclical.
Yeah.
Early in the evening, you might have a few people.
I was here at midnight last night, and it was just the four guys, you know, Yannick and Michelle and the other guys. It's like, hey, it's like, where is everybody? They're coming later.
Well, so many times people are talking down in the in Obie's hospital, and then they come up this way. We welcome them, but it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
And the initially, as I was saying, Bill would be back in the corner writing down tricks that people were giving him for Precursor. Ron was sort of holding forth out in the other room.
Yeah.
And I was trying to keep order and running for ice.
Oh, you're the ice man.
So now with The Room, I am ice chaser emeritus.
Teaching someone else how to do that.
Oh, they do a good job.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Ed, then, as we start to wrap up over here, that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word.
Magic Word?
What is your magic word?
No, I can't say it.
It could be something, again, that you use. I know you used to do like the elephant zipper and things, you know. You probably had a magic word. But it could be something that you use on stage. It could be something that's just your life force, your credo, something that you live by, you know.
I have a friend up in Ipswich, and he goes by the name of Ipswich Rich.
Ipswich Rich.
He said, magic happens.
Yeah.
And I just switched it and said, magic happened.
Yeah.
So that would be mine.
Very good. Thank you very much. That was Ed Eckel. This is Scott Wells at the at the Room. Scotty out. All right, things have quieted down here just a little bit more, and that it's about 1:17 approximately here on Sunday morning, and I am in the room over here with Rick Merrill and Steve Bergazzi.
Tickles.
And they had closed the 4F show. And next year, Steve is going to be the guest of honor. And you got to be pretty excited about being the guest of honor, aren't you?
I am. It's
quite an honor.
Yeah, not only the honor, it's going to be a great privilege for some of these guys to actually find out who I really am. No, stuff that they know.
But what do we not know about you?
We're going to find that out next year. Apparently, I'm uncomfortable to be interviewed by a man in his underwear, so I would appreciate if you could put his clothes on, don't you?
Well, you guys, if you put on your underwear, that'd be even better.
Then we'll be here.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, touche.
Wrong.
No. You know what's funny? I think there's some good things about this. I think one of the neat things I'm looking forward to, it's just been so long since I actually done any of my real act here.
Yeah.
So because of the
lecture. Yeah, your whole act used to be with the top hat and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I'll get to do some of that next year. So
you're going to put the top hat back on?
Yeah, who knows? I may bring the top hat.
You know, I thought one of the funnier things, too, years past, was whenever you did that video and you were out in the weeds and you look like some sort of a jungle guy or something, you know?
It was that we took on one of the other performers.
Yeah.
That was really my first time of making up. And going away from my act and making something up.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy that had from a
Flying Free
that said he was the South African world champion.
Yeah.
And I decided to
go searching for him.
Yeah, I went and got some shoe polish and put it on, and we went out in the weeds, and I had a translator.
Outside the hotel here,
Yeah, that was my first time actually doing what we've been doing ever since. And it was actually that film that kind of went on and... Luckily, Steve Bean.
Excuse me, do you guys name me here? We'll get back.
A lot of people.
Why don't you go put on your underwear?
Bean ticked off a lot of people. Apparently, the year after that or whatever, and then I ended up being I was asked to do what we do now. What you see?
Yeah. Now you and Rick have been friends obviously for 10 years or so. And how'd you first meet? Actually,
we're not even really friends.
How'd you first become acquainted?
At a ball game. It's a great... I let Rick tell this story because he'll make it sound like he's the hero.
Okay.
But this is actually the first meeting we had.
That wasn't the first meeting. The first meeting, he doesn't even remember, is someone made me show him my Sharpie act at Magi Fest before I ever met him. It might have been Gene Anderson.
And you're from Ohio.
I'm from Michigan.
Which is close to Ohio.
Way to do your research.
Hey, I'm like Larry King. I just kind of go with the flow. It's whatever rolls out of my mouth. I've had a few scotches here, too.
Yeah, that's right.
So Gene, it might have been Gene, or you know, it might have been Tom Craven. I don't know. Someone had me do the act for Steve. And Steve probably doesn't even remember this, but he was very gracious and very nice about it. Said it was the greatest thing he'd ever seen, blah, blah, blah. And he took me around and had me show.
I had the same amount of scotch as you had.
So you thought it was great too at the time.
He had me show a bunch of people, and really from then on, it was. I mean, he was just always pretty cool to me, you know. So before I'd ever won anything, he was one of the
your strong components,
biggish names of magic that I'd ever met.
Isn't
and,
that a shame?
Yeah,
Steve Bergazzi we're talking about.
Yeah.
I thought you meant Tom Craven.
I didn't have a lot of. A lot of idols and magic.
But the coolest
who
thing
were your idols, by the way?
Before we even get to that, and we're talking to Zio, was the actual that afternoon, we were with Obi, had talked to Obi about you coming, and now Tom did, but we went to a ball game with Obi.
Yes.
One of my favorite stories.
Well, allow me to tell it then.
Okay.
It's the St. Louis convention in 2004, the SAM.
Yeah.
It was in St. Louis. And so I competed there. That was the year that I won the IBM and SAM. Steve, did you ever win both? Oh, no, you didn't. So after I competed, Obi said, hey, come on, we're going to a baseball game. So I'm like, oh, cool, me and the head forker at a baseball game. Little did I know he'd invited Steve, too, so a little disappointing. But the funny story is I really didn't know Steve that well, but Obi said, hey, just give me your money. You know, guys, give me your money for tickets, and I'll put them all on my credit card.
Yeah.
So I gave him $40, right? And Obi puts it in his pocket, but he didn't push it in very far. So I see that there's still a 20 kind of sticking out of his pocket. So while he's paying with the credit card, I steal back out one of my 20s
from
his pocket, essentially. And so I'm laughing and I'm about to hand it to him. And Bargazzi goes, "You can't give that back to him." I'm like, "What do you mean I can't give it?" Before I can do anything, Obi turns around. Steve snatches the 20 out of my hand, takes a 20 out of his wallet, and says, "Here's my 40, Obi." So he just paid Obi with the 20 that I just paid him with. And so from then on, I knew that we'd probably be pretty good friends. It's a classic.
But do you remember who won the game?
Cardinals, I think.
Cardinals, yeah, yeah.
So on top of that, not only was Obi out 20 bucks, but he ended up buying us hot dogs. And
you got all the information. Who was your heroes? Great question, yeah. Scott.
My heroes growing up were, you know, the comedy. I mean, I loved Mullica. The first time I ever saw that Showtime at the Tomfoolery.
Did you go to the Tomfoolery?
No, no. I saw the video.
Okay.
Kidding me? I was...
Oh, you were a kid.
Yeah. But it was unbelievable. You know, David Williamson was unbelievable. I mean, Mac King, you know, I mean, those kind of guys. Chad Long. Dude, I didn't know anything about you. You weren't even on
But again, radar. We'll get Steve later. When he actually started his rising star. Well, when he's... It wouldn't call it a star.
Well, even the interviewer's getting out of the job.
I can't wait till next year.
But whenever that you were... you know, seeing these guys, they were mainly like on YouTube or something, or just their DVDs or
crap,
what?
Scott, YouTube wasn't around then. It was VHS.
Well, I thought it was like just 3 years ago.
No, it was at conventions, right? I mean, I'd see Williamson at a convention, and he would, you know, he would do his lecture, and he'd do a show, and you're like, holy crap, the guy didn't even do a trick, but he was unbelievable.
When was your first convention? You remember that?
My first convention ever was the International Battle of Magicians in Canton, Ohio, the very first one that they ever did.
Yeah. They always did something kind of weird, like free haircuts or something.
There was a 6-foot man-eating chicken the first year.
A man-eating chicken?
Well, that was a 6-foot man.
So women's were safe.
It was a 6-foot man, and it was eating a bucket of chicken.
Oh, okay.
But they touted the 6-foot, I'll never forget. I read the thing, I'm like, Dad, what do you think this is? A 6-foot man-eating chicken.
And he and your dad was the principal, of course.
That's right. So, I had VHS tapes of these guys, or I'd see them at a convention.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, they were my idols.
And so, Steve, how did you really get involved with magic, I mean, initially?
My main story is just as a kid, I've always liked magic, but I kind of saw Ronald McDonald.
Get comfy, everyone.
I've been doing magic for a long time, and I would go to conventions. I mean, I got kind of started a little bit kind of young, but my mentor told me one time that, Stephen, you need to enter a magic contest because if you do that, you can charge more money for your shows.
A winner.
By saying you're
not
a winner.
Just by entering. You actually have to win.
I didn't know that you can just make it up and say you won. Like
some people do.
Yeah, but I thought
magician of the century.
Yeah, I thought you had to be something. And my first contest was the Winter Carnival. It was the only contest I lost, but I came in second. But I met.
And you remember who won?
I actually met
you?
My king. And at the first time, and I went to high school with Lance Burton, but I didn't. He was below me a couple.
Name drop.
But it didn't really hurt. I mean, I didn't know him.
Yeah.
And of course, my king was from there. My king, I bought some tricks from my king. He worked at Caulfield's. Yeah. And again, I didn't know him. And there really wasn't a magic club at that time. In Louisville. So I just, and I ran away as a teenager, ended up, and that's where I got my mentor. But eventually it was neat kind of meeting them. But I did a contest just to get the name, but it was meeting these guys and then actually finding out that some people appreciated a little bit of my comedy. So.
And you were doing comedy in the contest?
I don't think I was meaning to, but it came out that way. No, okay. Actually, I did. I've always been funny because my speech is much better.
Didn't notice.
Than it used to be. So I could never be a serious magician or anything like that. I couldn't have been a Lance Burton.
Do you subtitle, Scott?
No. So I always.
It's a good thing it's not video. Yeah, like you said.
But I was a theme park guy. I started off like that way for a year.
Oh, didn't Lance do theme park calls? Was it the same place?
Yeah. No, not the same place. I was at Opryland.
I was going to say he was some like country cowboy.
He was at Tombstone.
Tombstone, yeah, cowboy.
Yeah. Him and Mike King together.
Yeah,
was and stuff like that.
And so you kind of honed your chops at the Opryland.
Yeah, I think that's when I first kind of became where it's really what I would say funny and what kind of my attitude.
That was an interesting story you talked about when you were working at the theme park and working with kids, and there was, do you mind relating that story again?
Yeah, it's really, I think, where my character really developed. I didn't know about theme parks, and I didn't really, back in the 80s, they would drop kids off and just leave them then go to work, and you babysit
all the day, right.
And, of course, they'd ride the rides in the day and morning, and then they'd come to stay at the magic shows, and they'd drive you crazy. And always saying, yeah, we've seen that. Well, you know, of course you've seen this. The same show I did. And so it really got aggravating, and I decided to quit.
Yeah.
Just got tired of it, told my wife we're quitting, and I went in there, and then I found out when you sign a contract with a major, you got to do what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't let me quit. They said, no, you're not. And you got to finish the season. And I was, I didn't know what to do. And my idea was to get fired. And I didn't really care. I thought if they fire me. And so I actually went out, and I was doing a kind of kid show and stuff. I just thought I'll be mean to kids. And then they'll fire me. And right across from my ride was a water log ride that came down. And across from my show. And it just kept going on. But the log came down the bottom, a bunch of water. 10,000 gallons would go on the bridge, but some of it would come over here next to my show in this big drain pipe by this bush and a rock. So I would do make fun of kids. I would get clatter. I would get the clatter box out, blindfold the kid. I would judge the thing, knowing when it was coming around. Pick the kid up, climb over the fence, set him on the rock with the clatter. Come back with my clatter box, make the silk, throw it, and everybody look, and I time it so right when they look. About this 5,000 gallons of water would hit this kid on this rock, throw him into the drain, and he would look like he just disappeared, but he would go down in there, and they would, of course, break the box, and I would be yelling at him, and I'd pull off this drowned rat kid, and it was great. I lost many clatter boxes in that drain.
I thought you were going to say you lost many kids.
No. But the thing that really happened was, I had so many of the kids on my side. Every morning, I would have 10 to 12 kids fighting to be that kid.
Uh-huh.
And the great thing is they never knew when the water was going to hit them. And I understand that today you would go to jail. But back then it was quite funny. And it really, I thought the meaner and the kind of the smarter guy I got with the show, and of course the kids could tell.
Yeah.
And if you stayed in that character, then the funnier the show got. And so really basically that's where I developed.
And did you do birthday parties and everything then too?
Yeah.
You treated the kids the same way at the birthday parties?
I just kept that guy the whole time because it was so much easier to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do one Christmas show a year that I have to do for a children's hospital.
Uh-huh.
And I show up as I'm related to the Grinch. And mm-hmm. So I'm just like him. I start off, I hate kids. I don't even want to Christmas. I don't like none of you. And just in the show, that every year I've done it. I'm on my 15th year with these people. They hire me every year for all these kids. And
to abuse them.
Yeah. And just like, here comes the Grinch.
What a great story. So Stephen hates kids.
In hospitals in particular.
And his disdain for children gets him booked all year doing shows for kids. What a sick world.
Yeah. No Sharpies, though, in my act.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
how's
that next act working for you? What are you working on there, Rick?
Well,
yeah. This is going to be good.
many irons in the fire.
After 12 minutes, Rick, what do you do?
After 12 minutes, I do it again.
And here's that act in case you missed it. You know, when I look at Boris Wilde, he was saying, okay, here's what happens like 12 years later or whatever. You know, he did this act today in which that, his kiss act was, when he had felt that first love. And so now it's kind of like it almost implies that his, wife has died or something, mm-hmm. because he's wanting to take off the ring and keeps looking up.
Career
at heaven.
Has died.
And so we're talking about Boris Wilde.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Who? I mean, there are others who have died as well on stage, but we're not going to mention them.
No. Let those guys go.
Let bygones be bygones.
Forget about tonight. So, anyhow, we had, the next iteration. I mean, you have evolved. You don't wear your top hat anymore, Steve, and you have a different character
it's
now.
It's really funny. I do wear it, even in the corporate world. I wear it with whatever suit or whatever I'm wearing. Sometimes I'll put the hat on still, just to stand out, to be different, and it kind of fits my character. And if I was in a theater show doing a thing, I would still sometimes with magic wear that guy. And definitely if I'm in a theater, somewhere else. It fits in really good. But I think sometimes in the corporate it became too much like you're the clown.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be that.
Yeah, not
you
in the corporate.
You didn't want to be the guy in the dragon outfit?
No. Yeah. And, you know, I think that that's interesting, that it's goofy with a dragon outfit, but he's got an attitude about it. Like,
I love
you know,
his attitude.
Like, I hate being in this outfit or something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he plays that up to the hilt. You know, I'd interviewed him earlier. Yeah, and he is pretty much in character. I mean, he's pretty much, you know.
Was,
yeah, in fact, he was looking at pictures, and, you know, if he wasn't serious, if he's smiling, I don't like that picture, you know.
Yeah.
Tries to stay in character all the time. Very funny, very good. He found a little niche. I was asking him about weddings, you know, if he ever works weddings. He was saying, I do have one coming up, you know, in costume. Imagine walking around, you know. And I said,
well, how brilliant.
I says, what about Halloween? He said, I go as myself. But I thought that was a funny line you guys said tonight about the guys in Japan. Do you want to replay that?
Go ahead, Steve.
No,
how'd you set it up?
It was basically we had already made
everyone else pissed.
There was some really good stuff there, and we try to highlight the good and the bad and the people that we have as friends and that we can roll over. So we had Mandy from England, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Mandy Farrell,
fantastic. Way to go, Mandy. And so we recognized some people, and then we had done a bit that. One of us, it wasn't me, but one of us decided that it might be funny about someone that had passed away. And not so funny, so it was a very awkward moment.
away from the line.
Yeah, we stepped back from the line a little bit. And then all of a sudden we bought Piffa.
Yeah.
And his attitude is just so good. And then we almost have to address it. Because even if he comes, he doesn't even want to be here.
Yeah.
So the setup for me was... I said, hey, what about Piff? He's pretty good. But not everyone seemed to like him. And then, of course, I try to set up the other guy, try to make him look like, you know.
The funny guy.
Funny. And
And then Rick says.
I said, not everyone liked him. Did you see the Japanese magicians dive under the chairs when he walked out?
The Godzilla joke for you guys out there.
You have to see the Piff.
Brought down the house.
It was definitely the line of the whole night other than that. Mm-hmm. And it was nice enough at the end of the show we did, of course, at Factors, Substitution Trunk, Metamorphosis.
Well, it makes sense.
And, of course. And
kind of like the Pendragons.
Yes.
Yes, the way you guys were kind of dancing in front of the sub-trunk.
Okay, great. And glad you saw that, noticed that.
Yes.
But the tagline was at the end that David Stone has snuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And and I would say 70% of the audience or 80% did not see him leave or did not figure that out. And then and we didn't use the sub-trunk the way you would normally did it. We actually did the color-changing apple. Mm-hmm.
From a granny to a Red Delicious.
Yes, and then which was also based on
earlier,
side salad and Catalina.
Christian side salad,
Christian
and Catalina.
Yeah, so it was a callback to them, and that's to that. So it was, at first, it was this is everybody thought you know they wasted our time with this great big box just for that little bitty trick,
which is what we're great at, wasting people's time.
We're on a little bitty trick, maybe.
And at a very tender, sweet moment.
Oh, I missed that.
We apologized in the beginning of the show to
that part.
Howie,
yeah.
Who really did get offended at us last year.
Because last year you were beating each other with pans.
Right. So with the violence.
We weren't really beating each other.
A few years ago, you beat up Roger Klaus.
Right. But this was him beating me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and go back to that, Roger was beating me. I haven't got to do the other one. I'm looking forward to next year.
I'm looking forward to beating Roger when I see him next. Whenever I die.
Actually, I hope we're not in the same room. But I made a line about Coke by Howie stayed up, and we had given him a wine bottle to apologize, and he busted the bottle over Rick's head,
right.
Which it was kind of cute because it went back, like, he hated the violence, and then he was the first to bring the violence
to do the
back.
Violence. I thought that was a cute thing. Then you were saying, hey, thanks for watching my back.
For having my back, which was set up in the very beginning of the thing.
Yeah.
And then...
well scripted, actually.
Yeah. We're geniuses.
Yeah. That's the word I was... No, that's not the word I was looking for.
Comic geniuses.
But back to my point. We were walking away.
Or comic. Karmic?
How does it? No.
Go ahead,
And I offered to buy him a Coke, in which, out of the trap, David Stone's head pop out.
Yeah.
Surprise number one.
With a little baggie
that's
of Coke.
Did
he have baggie? We didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah. I think he did.
Yeah, we didn't notice it. We didn't know. We didn't know what was going to happen. The little side note that, okay, well, I'll say in a second. But then after a second, everybody thinks that's over. Piff.
I wasn't expecting the second one, yeah.
Yeah, again with his attitude.
Yeah.
And he came out, not even sure what he did, but everything. But it was really cute. The thing that no one knew is that we had bought a book that said
how. Oh, he came back and he took Rick's wallet out of his pocket and took his money and threw his wallet back on the ground and just
walked. That's the way a magic dragon would be.
Exactly.
But the funny thing is that while they were in the box, we had both signed him a copy of a book called How to Slay a Dragon. And it was really neat, and it was just in there, and it was just a joke to them too.
Yeah.
And we had signed a little personal thing we can't talk about to them, but it was thanking them for doing it. But both guys were a great guy.
Yeah.
They get in and get in the box, and it was I think, at least of everything I had done, I think that was a perfect, like a real ending to a convention, the way it should end. The
Guest
of Honor was in the box.
It was
a good.
And I think it's a good thing also that you guys don't come with any preconceived notions from the standpoint that you take the ideas of things that have happened here, so it's topical. You know, kind of like the ointment that Dan Garrett had to use when he went to the hospital.
Right.
So you were able to use all that material and put that into the last night and tie the whole convention together. Right. So
and
I did like it.
That's the tough thing about it is. I mean, we really do write the things as this thing goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And we literally, this afternoon...
I didn't see much of you guys throughout the convention, because I imagine you were up here writing
all the time. Well, we're either at the events, because we have to go see what's going on. And then we try to come up here and write jokes. And, yeah, I mean, the hard part is it wasn't until 3 this afternoon that we actually tried to do a run-through, right? So we have no timing. We don't know how to word the jokes. We don't, you know, we think some things are hilarious. And, it is really... I mean, I never, until I started doing this with Steve,
tightrope up there.
Well, yeah, and I never understood how difficult it really was. I mean, people make it look easy. I mean, Steve always made it look easy, and then, I mean, it's...
Because Steve's a funny guy.
He's, there is that.
But the, another hidden thing is we're last. And you got some very funny people here, and mm-hmm. Steve Beam will kill us. Because he's going to see the same. He thinks guys that think the way we think.
Yeah.
They heard us because then we got to go. Oh no, we got to go back and take this out because he already hit it.
Right.
And tonight, my favorite Oscar is a very dear friend of mine.
Of course.
And I'm always going to hit on Oscar.
Yeah.
And then
he doesn't hit on Oscar.
No. Yeah. Okay.
You hit on his wife.
Yeah. he makes fun of Oscar.
Oscar does. When we have a good thing going together, kidding each other, and then. We're sitting, and then he called during the show. We thought, oh my gosh! And we thought it had ruined the part. And, there was two things that it did not. We were able to get around it, and it was still good. So thank Oscar, we still got the laugh on your behalf. But there was two lines that we had to take out while we were sitting in the back getting ready to go on because
you're still editing the last second.
Because so people, we can't say that now. We can't say that now.
Yeah,
and do it. So we lost a lot of things.
But
we
the fact you got nothing. Written, it's not like you're looking. I mean, everything like is, that. You've already...
Yeah, to be honest, when we came, the idea I had coming was I was going to do a quick change thing, making fun of people that do quick change and just saying you don't see that kind of stuff a year. Mm-hmm. And I was just going to, I might not tell them, we might do it one day in the future. But I thought it was funny, and then we were doing that. We were actually going out to get it done, and then all of a sudden, everything changed. And what changed is we saw... Those guys were making that film about restaurant
doing
magic,
illusions,
and we saw a great big great big box. It just happened to be here the
substrunk,
and we go, oh, we got to use it.
Yeah,
and so then it started from there. How can we use that? And we didn't get Pip. When did we get Pip?
Piff.
Was it just today?
After dinner. We got
translation thing.
An hour and a half before the show, we've figured out the ending. So
It was actually the extra kicker. He's the extra load in the chop cup.
Exactly.
Would be Piff.
Yeah, I didn't expect
that. So that was really
another last-minute thing, less than an hour before the show started, that we added him, and he was kind enough to go get. I think he enjoys the costume, to be honest.
Yeah,
I didn't think he already had it on.
Knocked on his room. So yeah, don't get us wrong. I mean, it's certainly very challenging, but it's very worthwhile when we get the laughs. I mean, you know, some years we do better than others, and it's always. But I don't think we've ever completely tanked. You know, so we've had a solid stand up doubles at least, and everything, and we've had a couple home runs. So
no, absolutely true. You know, and it seems that with Garnack leaving, you guys have kind of taken the place of Gene Anderson and Dan Garrett, you know.
Yeah, it was them, and then Steve Beam was there for me.
Yep, right.
So it went from Garnack to Steve Beam, and then there
you
was
guys.
Me,
yeah.
And for I did 4 years
and this guy
before I got
up.
Him.
Yeah,
yeah. I was actually hoping he wouldn't have taken over by now and be on his own.
Yeah.
But apparently next year
still
he will
mentoring
be.
Him. While you're being honored as the guest. That's right. All right, well, listen, I think we've gone on. Not over here. Yeah, that's right. Thank you guys very much. Let me ask you, by the way, and Steve, we've already and Rick, we have as well. I've asked you your magic word in the past. If you don't remember what it is, can you make up another one? Because the name of the podcast is called The Magic Word. So, Rick, what is your magic word for your life? Your
the magic word for my life?
Yeah. What are you?
Bingo.
Ah, crap. There goes mine.
So crap is yours.
Huh? Yeah, crap. No. Oh, come on. You going to live with that? Your wife's going to hear
this.
She's going
to stay there forever.
Trust me, my wife will never hear this. She wouldn't get past minute two.
Listen,
oh,
I've got dozens of listeners.
To these two knuckleheads, yeah. Mom, if you find this, hi. Yeah. What's yours,
so Steve?
You now had 15 seconds to try to deflect.
Yeah, I was really trying to think of something really good.
What's your magic word?
I don't know. Golly. I mean, I guess...
Consummate?
Constipate?
With another story. But I don't know. I know what I'm thinking, but I don't know a word for that. My vocabulary is not quite big.
I do translate for him sometimes. What are you trying to get across?
I'm just trying to... Don't ever let... Just think that because we're doing this stuff, I mean, I don't ever get the big head where you think you're better than everybody.
Nepotism.
Ego.
Nepotism. Okay. Or no.
Scott, if Scott wouldn't have laughed, we could have gone with
for the rest of my life. I'd be going, hey.
Okay. So whatever word you think that would relate to.
Steve is saying stay humble.
Yeah, humble. Oh, that was it. Humble. Is that I just realized what a great gift that we have as magicians. There's many people that work and do things that they, but we actually get to play and have fun. And I mean, make a living at this.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, there's not a better gig on earth.
Yep, you got that right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that a lot, there, Rick, and thank you, Steve. You guys are great, good friends.
Thanks
very much.
Always good talking to you.
See you, Scott.
It's a great Scotty out.
Hey, one last thing. Oh. Don't forget the.
The UK, that's the best part.
Although,
my daughter so wants
okay, we're
to
back over to Precursor Suite, and it's about, I don't know what time it is, it's 2 o'clock. And so,
in the afternoon.
It is, that's right. And Sean, we talked earlier, you've already told me, Kevin, you thought, no, don't shut up. You never shut up even if I told you to shut up.
Verbal diarrhea.
Peter McLaughlin over here from Scotland, they say, hey.
How are you?
The card man.
McLonican.
Peter
McLonican.
And that's
of the McLonicans.
What did you think of the convention?
It's absolutely awesome. I mean, David Stone was wonderful.
Rocked the house.
It was just everybody. The show tonight was just phenomenal. I don't know if I've ever been to a magic convention where I've seen a show that had that much talent and that much humor and that much class and that much just raw professionalism. It was insane.
Wow.
It was wonderful.
That's quite a quote.
The 15-year-old kid.
Even though Farquhar was in it.
Yeah.
And he did it
despite his
except
sport.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? I can watch you do the solid cuts and balls.
You're talking Billy.
Yeah, the 15-year-old French kid. Billy was phenomenal.
Billy was good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. When you hear his story that he spent 3 years in a bubble in a hospital, I mean, of course he's grand. The kid did nothing but sit in a bubble.
He had a lot of time.
And learn card tricks. He had time. But his raw talent is just unfettered.
Yeah, he was.
He seemed kind of like the Buck Twins, you know, combined.
But with finesse.
Yeah.
No.
And charisma.
But there's a charisma that he has.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, there's a stage
come on, when he does the thing with the glasses and it's like.
Well, he seems to have the poise of a 25-year-old, and the kid's just 15, but he looks like he's 11.
When he lit up on that stage, he looked so professional, and he controlled. When Obi accidentally, you know, thought it was over, he went to stand up, and he goes, "I have not finished yet." He was like,
and he said, "And to continue."
Then to continue. Oh, my God.
It was brilliant.
I don't know if anybody else would do that. You know, Obi steps up, you go, "I guess I'm
okay,
done."
Okay, I'm done. That's right, exactly. Before I get the hook.
He's going to blow the whistle.
It was fun having Daryl back.
He was. I wanted to grab Daryl, but I never did get a chance to chat with him. But, I haven't seen him in such a long time. And he was 2004 or something, I think, when he was... No, it was longer than that. It was 92.
Really?
92, yes, it was 92. Wow. When he was the guest of honor, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was... Yeah, it's been a great weekend.
What do you think? I mean, you came all the way from Scotland just for this.
Yeah.
And you do it again?
I do it every year. This is my favorite weekend of the entire year.
You plan your year around this, don't you?
Pretty much, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. You need me to actually interpret for...
What did he just say?
Peter's... his accent is very thick. He basically said he owes me a lot of money, and he's willing to pay me back just before he leaves tomorrow morning.
I missed the part about he loves Tarbell Course of Magic.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Remember, Jeff, I am a Scotsman with a stereotype to live down to.
With a what? Oh, I heard you.
Yeah.
Do you need a translator?
Yeah.
We could probably get David Stone in between to translate.
Get Siri, maybe a Siri translator with it. That was kind of funny, you know, I thought what Marietta had.
Oh.
A little bit rude, but that was funny.
No, it was priceless. Just priceless. And you know what I thought would have been really funny was tonight in the introduction when they said, "And please welcome to the stage your MC for this evening." If they'd edited that in, it would have been the moment.
Yeah.
Truly would have been the moment.
Yeah.
Would have brought them. But what a great, great production. Every year it gets a little bit, it's hard to say that, but it gets a little bit better. Because, you know, I guess we're all comfortable. I loved when David Stone spoke. He really spoke from his heart.
Yeah.
You know, when he basically broke down in front of us and, you know.
And he did have tears in his eyes. Yeah. It was an emotional moment.
And he spoke truthfully that I don't think there's a single artist who gets up in front of all of us who isn't terrified when they perform.
Yeah.
It was such a real moment. It was, honored. You know, I don't think I've been any prouder to wear the pin than tonight after seeing what I saw this week. I mean,
so you're getting a taste of what it's going to be like when you're going to be the guest of honor 2 years.
Well, I can hardly wait for Bargatze next year. You know, they're doing him first because they're afraid he might not have any teeth by 2014.
Yeah. Well, he is from Tennessee.
Tennessee,
you know.
Yes.
From my perspective, to hear David talking... You know, that people of such a such a magnitude in magic, such as yourselves and David and all the others, especially those that were on tonight, that still get really nervous performing before it. It gives people like me who have only been coming, this is only my third 4F. It gives people like me hope.
Yeah, well, come on, the 4F audience is like performing for an oil painting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're funny, they laugh really loud. But when you fool them, they don't even clap, they just stare at you going,
"You got me bad."
Let's work that one
out.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Well,
the way that I explain it to my lay people friends about how important this convention is, certainly within magic or within close up magic, is the first year that I walked out and I looked at all the previous guests of honour on that front row, and I basically in my head went, okay, so I've got your books, got your DVD set, looked at Gene Anderson, realised I didn't do his stuff, then went, got your stuff, everything you've ever written. Your stuff.
And somebody did that one year. I remember some years ago, some guy sat there and he kind of looking back and forth, scanning the audience, and he said exactly what was on your mind. Like, I've got your DVD, I've been to your lecture, I've got your lecture notes. What am I doing here?
My first year, I had this brilliant opening that I thought was going to be gorgeous. And when I looked at the crowd, you see Alex Helmsley and Herb Zero.
Yeah.
I just looked and went, I thought most of you were dead. So,
thought.
Yeah.
I was like, and then the next time I went to the
room, I'm in heaven. Dude.
If everybody in this room was dead, a lot of bad magicians would get a lot of work.
Actually, you know, I had the same sort of thought. I thought this weekend, if a bomb had taken out the Clarion Hotel, the world of magic would have taken a very serious hit.
Yeah.
Because there was so much raw talent.
It's the same way every year, though.
Oh,
every year.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's larger, I think, this year than ever. Well, they have 230 people or so.
It's larger
than
ever.
But it's maxed out.
You know, the person we kind of missed was Boris Wilde and his presentation today, the new version. Wasn't that just breathtaking?
It was very good. You know, it was what he had talked about for you guys, the podcast listeners over there, that he was trying to have the future of his KISS act, which had won FISM. And so what happens, you know, 10 years from now?
Yeah, 10 years.
Basically.
Once the romance is gone and the relationship is...
What did you get out of that? I'll tell you what I thought of it. What do you think?
I felt that it was like...
What was he trying to say? What was the symbolism?
The relationship.
Really?
That for me, I saw, you know, the beautiful butterfly and everything going
yes.
black, and that no matter how hard he tried to erase things, that the darkness came back. And then in the end, the darkness turned into the girl, and then the darkness left, leaving these empty butterflies, and then the red butterfly came back, meaning everything was back together.
Okay,
here's... There was a conflict in relationship for me. What did you think?
Okay, interesting. It's kind of like, you know, looking at an abstract painting.
Exactly.
They all have different ideas. I thought his wife was dead because he kept looking at up like in heaven. He'd look up at the ceiling like as if he'd look at her picture and he'd look up. And then he would start to take off his ring like, you know, okay, well, she's been gone long enough. I probably should forget about her. No, I can't. You know, she's still in my heart. You know, I still love her. You know, and then at the end, whenever that the butterflies had disappeared, I mean, they'd turned from red to black. So obviously she had died. That's what I thought, you know. And then the butterflies disappeared and he put his fingers, you know, through the holes of the butterflies. Like, I have accepted that and I passed, you know, on there too.
It's a great interpretation. It's sort of the same thing, though. It's a conflict in the relationship or a change in the relationship that dramatically affected.
But it was emotional. It hit on all the different, you know, chords of the heartstrings.
Yiddish word. He was verklempt at the end. You could see
verklempt,
that it took him a minute to compose, to even take his bow.
Well, he was saying, I hope that you get the emotion out of this that I'm putting into it.
Yeah.
You know. Now, you do that, don't you? No, you do. You're very much an artist
I'm
also.
I'm not Boris Wilde. I mean,
no, you're not.
Really,
but he's not Sean Farquhar. And not Jeff Williams. Not Peter McLaughlin.
I cry after every routine that Sean does, but it's usually for a different reason.
Lack of technique. I understand.
It's like, I hope
I love your Rubber Band stuff.
Oh, thank you.
I had to say that.
Thank you very much.
I did learn something. I did learn. And that's one of the benefits about the 4F, I think, is that you guys are around here to share things and that they're willing to say, hey, I want to show you something and I'm going to be around the rest of the weekend and I'm accessible. I'm not going to be hanging out in my room. You'll never see me again. I'm just performing and, you know, leaving. You know,
it's one of those wonderful places you can say, what do you think? And they'll actually tell you honestly.
Yes, exactly right.
Nobody rubs you. Nobody tries to stroke your ego.
I think everyone is kind of, they recognize that people are on kind of a level that they can appreciate each other's talent and creativity, so they're not trying to steal something from somebody else. And so I'm just looking to, you know, increase myself and help increase you, because we're all brothers.
Yeah.
You know,
your house doesn't look better when you burn down your neighbors.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
It is.
It's a great line.
We all build it. You look at these people.
The Boraf seems to me to have more of a family atmosphere. It's like just a huge family. And every year we graft in a few extra children. But you've got the older members who are the patriarchs, and then the rest of us who are kind of growing up, you know, in this family. We're learning the rules. We have rules here. But the thing is, it's become such a familial type of thing.
Very much so.
Yeah. And there's that couple of cousins we don't want to talk about.
Well, there's
right?
The red-headed stepchild who's chained under the stairs. We don't talk about that.
Yeah.
The way I look at 4F is, it's the way I thought magic clubs were when I was a kid. There's no political BS. Simple as that. You know, it is a genuine fraternity, a brotherhood, a fraternity, call it what you like, but we are a close-knit group.
who are all willing to share with one another.
I think it's interesting. There's very little ego. We weed it out really quickly. You see those guys who come in with ego, it's their first year, and they either don't come back or they get beaten down to where they know you don't have an ego here. Because look around the room at the talent that is around you.
Yeah.
I remember the first year I sat at a round table at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and the guy next to me was this Frenchman I never heard a name of, Babel. And everybody was doing some magic, and they were passing the decks, and when Babel did stuff, I was stunned. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And then he says, "Your turn." And I looked at him and said, "Yeah, there was a mix-up in the invitation. Someone gave one to me. I'm sorry. I'm leaving." I started to get up, and Joshua and Jay said, "Everybody does something." And I was like, "Right. My turn." It was such a learning experience that, you know, that every time I come here, I told Jeff today, I learned 3 new things this year.
Oh, yeah.
I learned this great move that Billy taught me. I learned a different handling that Mike showed me. And I learned that I got a heck of a lot more to learn. That's what I learned.
Well, you know, I go back, of course, to the Forks. I've been here, this is like my 29th or 30th year. And one of my memories is sitting around the bar one time, and I was showing this guy a particular trick. And it was called Dave's Delight, was the name of the trick. And it was my variation or whatever, you know. And as I was doing it, this old guy, you know, was saying, "Well, the way I invented it, you know, was this." And then he started showing me. And I looked at his name tag. It was Dave Letterman, you know. And so it was, Dave was the guy who had invented Dave's Delight. You know? It's like, wow.
It's a small world. Really.
It is. And just today, you know, we were at lunch and we were talking about the smash and stab, you know, that's on the video on screen, you know, where that apparently that something goes wrong, you know, and this guy uses a girl's hand, you know. And I said, "Oh, that's Martin Cox." I said, "That's the guy. It's right there. It's behind us right now. That's Martin." I said, "That was," and, you know, the guy said, "You're kidding me, you know." It's a small world, you know.
I had that conversation with last year because I said, "I want to put that in my show and out in my theater, and I'm going to put this goof, this guy who stabs this woman's head."
Yeah.
"That's me, Sean." I'm like,
"Yeah.
Of course it is."
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah. It's a small fraternity when you get to this level up here. Yeah. It's different.
It's such a kinship. And, you know, by coming here, I think that any of these people could go anywhere in the world and there'd be somebody waiting, because 4F is such a global group.
It is now. Yeah. Always really, yeah.
I never feel prouder than when I walk someplace and I see you for a friend or something.
Yeah.
It's just it's a real, you know, it's a badge of honor. It really is.
Yeah. Well, you know, in fact, I was doing this podcast a couple days ago. We were doing dueling podcasts with Marcus Souza because he's posting something on another one, Magic on the Side. And so he turned the tables, asked me, he said, what's your magic word? And my magic word is brotherhood. I was saying, you know, it really is a brotherhood of what we're doing, you know, here. And I really think that it's a tight-knit fraternity, and we're sharing with each other, you know.
That's really sweet. My my magic word is isoctophenoloxypolyethoxyethanol. But
can you spell it?
It means brotherhood, though, in another language. So, yeah,
which
so,
language would that be? I'm testing it out.
Another language.
Croatian. And if there are any Serbo-Croatians out there, I want to apologize for hijacking your language.
This is the point of the brotherhood where we're supposed to press you.
And Sean, I've got your word. On my Facebook page, I think, you know, for the magic word. I don't remember what it was that you told me, but I've got that actually listed over there.
Pywacket?
No, that wasn't it.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember what it was. Something that you live by, something that is your credo, something that is by. So I have to ask you, Peter, what is yours?
I'm with you. It's brotherhood.
No, you can't steal someone else's.
No. I've always felt like
that. I know Sean's credo is don't keep picking at it or it'll never heal.
Yeah. I have a motto, and that is I'm a small part of a really big show. I love that.
That's wonderful.
When my father worked, they'd have like guest acts come in, and the first thing he said, "We just want to point out you're a small part of a really big show."
Yeah.
And he just put the right place. I get it.
Yeah.
And Tex would always say it, and he always said there was always room in the blanket for one more. He referred to life as a picnic. There was always room in the blanket for one more.
My motto has always been, a magician who's not working is only fooling himself.
I used to laugh about that. We go to the Magic Castle where we had like a week off. Lori and I would drive for 2 days to get to the castle, and there'd be those guys jockeying for position at the bar going, "Yeah, well, I'm working on this project, I'm doing that," and I'd finally go, "So you're not working either, right?"
Yeah. I'm working on getting work.
You wouldn't be here either. And I'm like, why do you have to posture like that?
Hey, Mark.
Honest, you know, you're not.
So Marcus Souza is about to leave the room. He's about to leave the building.
Yo, this is
Marcus
leaving the building.
Thank you
very much. Good night.
So good to see you. drive safe. There's people like me on the road.
They got rid of that loser.
Wow. Didn't think he'd ever leave. Stop saying things like that, Peter. It's rude.
All right. That's probably enough. Weird. I need to start wrapping up. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate your time and attention over here. Thank you guys very much. This is Scotty out. Okay, we were talking a little bit earlier about Boris Weil. Well, he showed up. And so you were just asking then, Jeff Williams, about what?
Yes, I was kind of curious as to, because it's probably the seriously most beautiful thing I've ever seen as far as close-up magic. And I was interested in how many hours do you think you've invested into developing the act? I mean,
the Kiss act or the new act?
No, this brand new. The
Butterfly act. Yes, I would say hundreds, if not thousands. It took me 4 years from the moment I really started to work on the act until it's finished. But I have been thinking of it for like another year and a half. So I would say 5 years and a half total. And it was not easy, to be honest, because I mentioned it today just before to say that I just don't want to disappoint people, because you know when you want physical with an act and then you do a new act, people, you know, expect you to be as good as the first, if not better, and you have a lot of pressure, and I hate disappointing people. So that's why, and I am a workaholic. I really work hard, and I'm not afraid of spending years on something which lasts 8 minutes finally, because it's worth it. It's really worth it. And now I have the confirmation finally, because I didn't do it so much until now. So it was important for me. It was like a test in front of my peers.
Now, do you feel that the act is done and finished, or do you see yourself changing elements of it within the next 6 months or a year?
It's hard to say. I mean, if I refer to the Kiss act, it has not evolved much between the very first performance and the last time I did it. It evolved, of course, but not in the script or the story, or maybe the effects change a little bit, or I just polish them, or I just make them smoother, etc. But I think the script is there, and I would probably keep it. I would think that if it's the same as the Kiss act, it's finished, but it will evolve in some. I have already made it evolve since last year. I already changed a few things, but it's more in the presentation, it's more in the body language, and just to make it smoother.
What do you feel, Boris, is the most difficult part of coming up with a brand new act from scratch? I mean, what are the most difficult elements in starting something like that? Because there are a lot of people out there that are like, I'm really wanting to do something new and vital and important. And so where do you start, or what do you think is probably the most important aspects to
build the act?
Yes.
It's funny you ask the question, because it's part of my lecture. I have a lecture on creativity and impact, and the first part is about creativity, and I talk about the method I developed to create my FISM act, the Kiss act, that I used again for the second act, the Butterfly. Yep. And and my main thing, and I was talking about that with another guy today here, it's funny, I would quote the Apple's slogan for many years, think different. And that's the thing, if you manage to be different than the other ones, people will remember you better, and people will book you and not anybody else doing something similar, because nobody else does something similar. So if you can manage to look around and analyze, I would say, the market. It's not. I worked in marketing before doing full-time magic, so maybe it's my marketing background that speaks a little bit now. But still, you need to analyze a little bit what is done and what especially is not done, and maybe try to find a way to, you know, to make your way in that little field. And I always compare magic to cinema, because I love cinema, and in cinema you have like horror movie and drama and thriller and everything, and you have romantic comedy, and you have, and when you look at magic, you have a lot of comedy. Ha ha ha, make them laugh. Good. You have also thriller with suspense, and you know, all these stunts and stuff like that. Mental magic is more about the drama, the performance, etc. But there are feels in magic that you see in cinema you don't see in magic. Like, I would say, like, not romance, but, you know, that kind of nothing which is more about feelings and emotions. And we do live performances. We don't do YouTube. We don't do videos. We are in front of people, and we are, I would say, naked in front of them when we perform. And in a way, I would say, not literally, I know maybe you will be jealous, but not me. And I saw pictures. And that's what we expect to do. I mean, we expect to touch people, and that's the kind of the act I do here now. It's really an act that I think should be seen only live and not on video. And I will not put any video on YouTube or on my website or anything. I just want to make sure that the only way for them to experience the act is just to live it also, not only see it.
Because it's transcendental. In other words, it's just something that happens, or transient, I should say, that would happen of the moment, and you have to be there to experience it. It's not like art you see on the wall. It is an art you have to experience at the performing art right now.
Yes.
Like live theater.
Yes. Absolutely, yeah. That's the beauty of our job. I mean, it's like, that's true. It's pretty much like in a movie. It's that you will not cry if that scene is not, if you don't leave that scene at that particular moment in the film, or if you just take that scene and if you just watch it later, just this and nothing else around, because it doesn't make any sense.
You know, I thought that you're, I'll get to Jeff in a second, but that your act today, you know, let me back up a little bit, that this evening, that whenever the David Stone was given his award and he got emotional and got tears, I would have to say that when I was watching your performance, and I saw you do this, I think, at the IMX, then also actually with the Butterfly.
The world premiere.
Yes, exactly. But it did elicit some emotions from me, and I started to tear up. And then I also was taken on a roller coaster where, when you had these cards lined up, and then one card kind of moved over to the other one, it was the music changed and the mood changed, and so it was a lot more lighthearted thing. And then later, I was thinking about, okay, well, to me, the abstract picture was that your wife had died and you were wondering whether you were going to remove your ring or not. You know, were you going to leave her or still continue to think about her or whatever? You know, Sean and I had this conversation on the podcast earlier of what we felt like actually was happening there symbolically. He had a different opinion than what I thought.
Okay.
But that's just like art, and that's exactly what I think it was.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because you say that. So several people came to me earlier today, and we were talking exactly about that. And I just, and they were mentioning, and they were talking about the fact that maybe it might be like a separation, or it's just maybe, I mean, she left you, or maybe she's dead, or maybe. But at the end, when the butterfly comes back and flaps his wings, does it mean that there is still hope, or does it mean that she is still alive in your heart in a way, or does it? And that's what I like. In some movies, sometimes, once again, I take the comparison of the film because I like that. In some films, sometimes it's great to exit the theater and people talk and say, well, "What do you think when the director at the end did this and that? Do you think that maybe?" And it's like a David Lynch movie, like Mulholland Drive, for example. It's like quite hard to understand the first time. And even the second time. But at the same time, people exit the theater talking about it. And it's good because, the performance, it's like the performance is not over when you just exit the stage. It keeps going a little bit in their
mind. It's like a movie Inception or something. You wonder about that afterwards, or Matrix, or, you know, yeah.
And so many performances, and especially magic performances, sometimes are a bit too basic. I mean, it's just like they make it very obvious or very bold, so we understand what they want to express. And there is no room for any kind of thinking or reflection or going a bit further in what the artist wanted to express in his art. And I think that's interesting to do that in magic too, and not only in other forms of art. And that's probably what's missing. And I humbly try to put that a little bit in my act. And it seemed to work, because I'm glad to have this feedback. It's exactly what I had in mind.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Jeff, you're going to say?
Well, yeah, I actually have two questions, and one of them is, what do you think is the hardest part about creating a new act from scratch?
I'm quite sure. I mean, I would say it's the magic effect. For me, it was the magic effect. And the script, as I said, the script was in my mind for a long time. I thought it was, once again, movie and magic. doing a sequel to an act was something interesting as a concept, and because I haven't seen that before, and they do that a lot in movies and books, and you know, and so why don't we do that in magic? Let's do it. Let's have some fun. Let's do something which happens after the kiss act. But after the kiss act, what can we do? Well, they fall in love. They're happy. It's pretty much the same thing. I don't want to do the same thing, but at the same time, I want to keep the same spirit, but to go further and be a little bit and be different again. So and time has passed, and I think it was a good thing because finally I got older and my idea got a bit more mature, and I realized that it should be darker. And I realized, well, maybe you can cry with emotion because you're happy, and sometimes just because bad things happen, because that's life, unfortunately. And I just had this idea of, oh yeah, maybe I could express something like she's she was very sick, and in my mind it was very dark and very graphic at the beginning. I said they should understand that maybe I lost her because she had a terrible disease like AIDS or cancer or something like that, and after I realized it's better if I don't say too much because everybody can rely on that. Either some people will think about that, a sickness or maybe an accident, or maybe they would just think about separation and not particularly death. And it's good because once again you make your own interpretation of the act, because you will see it and feel it and analyze it and maybe have it in your mind depending on your own experience, and it's good because you will see the same act but with different minds. You will have a different approach to it, and you will understand it differently because it's not that old and so obvious. And it's interesting, again, like what I said earlier about leaving the theater and still talking about it just to say, what do you think? Or do you really think he lost his wife and that's why he did that tribute to her? Well, in that case, wow. Well, no, maybe he's an artist. He's just a performer, so he just told her a story. He's an actor. He's just playing. Are you sure? It felt really, really true. It was really sincere. Well, no. Maybe. And people still talk about you, which is a good thing. Especially if you have like a full lineup. Excuse me. So I like the idea. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. Everybody has his own interpretation of the same thing. It's like some optical illusion sometimes. You get to see differently, but it's the same thing, finally. So, it worked on the Butterfly, and I hope it will work for the other ones. We'll see it later.
I was going to say, when you ask your next question, let's go and step into the room. We're going to pause this for a second. We're a little bit quieter in there. Okay, Jeff?
So, if you could, since I see you as being kind of on the cutting edge of magic thinking. I mean, you're obviously one of the most popular and most successful magicians ever to come out of the entire country of France. I'm really wondering, from your perspective, what, if anything, you know, would you change about the state of magic today?
When you say the state of magic, you mean the way people approach magic, or just the way they think magic? Or
the way, the way magic seems to be heading today, or the current trends of magic, which would you change?
Wow, that's a tough question, I would say.
What are some things about the way magic is today that you would like to see different?
Well, to be honest, internet was a great thing for magic and a bad thing also at the same time. There was a lot of, you know, discussions and controversy about whether internet was a good thing for magic or not. Let's face it, and to tell the truth, I mean, I see a lot of guys now from a new generation. We call them the YouTube, you know, generation. And lots of them now are just more focused on moves and techniques. And they just, you know, they are the young kids who just perform, of course, first for themselves. And that's the kind of thing which really, not annoys me, but I think that should be really improved, because internet should be a great tool. It doesn't need to doesn't need to lead people to that way, just to concentrate on move. Now you go to YouTube, you see a clip of the guy doing this cut, crazy cut, and the other one say, oh, this guy did 18 cuts, I'll do another false cut with 21 cuts, so that would be even better, and then. And finally, you just watch this and say, what's the point? Who cares? And sometimes I see kids coming and they just, I'm blown away by their technique and they show me a move and I'm like, wow, what? Can you show me a practical use of that in a routine? I was like, no, I don't know. I
mean, it's just juggling, hand juggling.
Yes, it's hand juggling. So technique is nice, but people don't care about technique unless you just do it as a, I won't say, like a concept act, which is only based on flourishes and stuff. So then it becomes different. It's just a demonstration of a crazy flourishes, and it can become a fun thing to watch. But if you really focus on magic, people don't care about the methods. People don't care about the crazy cuts, and you know. And if you just arrive and you do like crazy cuts, after that you can do miracles. People will be like, hey, right. Have you seen what he can do with cards? He can do anything. Look at the thing he did at the beginning. That's a big deal. So I always like the other Columbo, you know, the TV series Columbo.
Sure.
Always, Peter this Fox. Guy just arrives and he looks like nothing, and people just like look at him like, well, I don't know who's that guy, but look at him, and he seems to be a little bit, you know, bugging people and a bit annoying, and finally you just realize that he's much cleverer than what he looks like, and he finally gets, of course, the murderer, etc. And I like, just like the state of mind, if you just come and you get low profile and you make it, you know, nice, and you don't show up your skills, etc. But finally people realize that, well, you have some very clever hidden skills that you don't show the way other people show. And finally you get to the point and you don't see it coming, like, oh, that's what I like. And I much prefer that, to be honest. I mean, the techniques is one thing, but honestly today if I could change something, I would just say to this old generation who is focused on moves and who buy DVDs because it's a new cool move, etc., just never forget that magic is a form of art. Just think artistry and think of how you can include your great slates and your great moves and your skillness into something that doesn't look like a demonstration of, you know, presentation is important. And sometimes people are like not ashamed but almost of doing something which is more simple with the techniques, but with a better sense of presentation. But what's the point finally? What the people will see? Will they enjoy it? Will they feel the magic, or will they just feel that, oh, that guy did some kind of move in his hand, I don't know what he did, but he did something, and they don't see it, but they feel it, and it's worse when they feel rather than when they see. But on the other hand, they feel the right thing because you just offer them something that looks like real magic, then we don't care if there is skill or not, and whether you're good, you're very good at manipulation or not. Just the result is important. It's like painting. Most people don't care about if the guy spent like a year to do the painting or if he spent 10 minutes. And they don't know about the techniques and what kind of paintbrush he was using and what kind of painting and the color and the mixes. We don't care. We just look at the final result and you're like, wow, that's great. And the guy look at you and say, well, it took me 3 minutes and a half maybe, and I was watching TV at the same time. And you're like, oh, shit, that guy's a genius. Look at that. And on the other hand, he might say, well, it took me 3 months, and you cannot imagine every single thing, and the brush and the color and the mix. You see this blue mix here is just the same as this one. You're like, oh, my God, that's amazing. But finally, he had to explain to me what he did. Otherwise, I would not have guessed, and I would maybe have preferred the other one, which touches me more.
Right.
This one. So it's art. So there's no definition in art.
Everyone has a different appreciation of art.
Absolutely. And the technique is not really important. important. Once again, in a movie, you can do CGI effects as wonderful. And in some great movies, they also use like very traditional thing when someone pull a rope and just open a box. And finally, when you watch the thing, you see the special effects. You have no idea if it was CGI or not because it's well done.
It's true.
And we don't care. We have absolutely no interest in that.
Exactly.
It's in Titanic, do you have the impression that the boat is really sinking, and you have the impression that all these people are dying, and it's just awful, and you're so sad for this young couple? Yes. Do you feel it? Yes or not? And all the rest is just to serve the story, like the magic serves the story when you perform. Because basically you're an actor playing, you're not a magician, let's face it. So all the technique behind the acting and behind the magic and behind the method, it's not the most important. So if people, I mean, most people would just think this way. I think magic would not be considered sometimes like a form of, you know, entertainment for kids, because unfortunately a lot of people still think that magic is like that kind of entertainment, and it will elevate it, I think, to another form of, a better form of art. And if we just do it all, maybe one day they will consider it maybe as the equal of music or cinema or painting or sculpture. I don't know, I hope. But so far, if they keep seeing guys doing, like, you know, juggling with cards and feather flowers and glittering outfits and stuff like that, there is no way they can consider that as a form of art. They would just think it's entertainment, and sometimes poor entertainment, which is the most awful thing for magic. And so we'll try a little bit, little by little, we'll try.
That's a great answer. I really hope that up and coming magicians, especially the young newbies of the art, will listen to this particular podcast over and over. And listen to what Boris has said, because those are extremely important words.
They really are. I didn't want to interrupt at all. I mean, you were really on a great roll. Some great ideas. Very good. Thank you, Boris.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
Seriously? And thank you, Jeff. They were good questions, too.
Yeah.
You need to join me more often.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. All right. That was Jeff. And Scotty out.
Hey, Scotty here again. Do you have a thought, comment, or suggestion for this podcast? Would you like to have these podcasts longer, shorter, or are they just right? Are there questions that you'd like for me to ask some people during my chats? Do you like the format of my podcasts, and are they easy to download and hear? Post your comments on the Magic Word blog or through iTunes. Or you can send me a direct private message to scott@scottwells.com. You've heard from me, now I look forward to hearing from you. Scotty out.